kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you. Just a couple of games to talk about, but before we get to that, Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I'm doing wavy gravy. How are you, man?
Wavy gravy. That's a new one.
Oh, yeah. It's that good gravy, not that lame, flat, non-wavy gravy. It's that gravy with a jerry curl.
Gravy with a jerry curl.
Yeah, the good stuff. Goes great with a nice glass of Sunny D.
You are crazy.
I tried.
Gravy and Sunny D sounds disgusting.
What? No! That's anything paired with Sunny D is a treat.
I'm not sure I believe you, but for now, I'll just take your word for it.
Think about it. Every time you match it against that purple stuff, it never lost. I mean, what I can tell, that's the signs of a quality beverage. Just saying. True. I mean, because what else typically beats out the purple stuff? Not much.
True. I'll give you that.
That's right. That's right. No, nothing beats the purple stuff. But, you were talking earlier about Shenmue and the idea that recently someone posted an image of a character that's going to be in the game. If I remember correctly, that's like the guy that the sort of final boss that's supposed to be the end boss of the whole series for the most part. And my thought is, I'm surprised they're even going through with it because. Yeah, I know they had the Kickstarter, and I know that there was, like, you know, people who played the old ones were anxious to get the new one. But then they were like, hey, in order to drum up interest for the follow-up game, we're going to re-release 1 and 2 in remastered form. The legend continues, but starts anew here. And all those people who were too young for the game, or all the people who wanted a refresher, were able to pick this game up. And what we all realize is that the game is even more boring now than it was then. And the only value Shenmue brought to the table was that it was a precursor to the Yakuza series, which are fun games. I'm sure there's people out there that like, want to have a throat for saying that, but I'm sorry. My brother was in the original Shenmue. I watched him try to play. It was depressing to watch. You have to do, they make you go to work. You work at the docks piling a forklift truck. Games tend to have jobs sometimes to make money. I get it. Mm-hmm. And they can be fun. Like, I mean, that's like when people joke about say how they'd rather like mow their lawn virtually than like, you know, do it for real. Simpsons did it. But at the same time, you know, it's bad when you're playing a game that has a job in it and you go, I'd rather be at my actual job being miserable than playing this abomination. How do you make a job end game not enjoyable? Or maybe that was the point. I don't know. Maybe they wanted the job to feel like work to show kids what it was like in the real world. That's very possible. And if that's the case, way to kill it, guys. Way to kill it. But I'm sorry. Like that, the remaster didn't teach anybody anything about it, and I'm actually genuinely wondering how many people are still really itching for this final game. If you are, nothing wrong with you. More power to you. I get it. But I just can't see the love.
There's just people out there who need some more lucky hit.
Maybe that's what it is. You know what they could have done? They could have just did it in a movie form, but then just had Lucky Hit attached as a side game.
A mobile game.
No, let's not go nuts. No mobile game. I'm saying they sell it on like a PS4 disc, you boot it up, and it is pretty much a movie. Or this would fix it. See it come full circle. Take the Yakuza engine and use it to program Shenmue 3, and then have Lucky Hit. And have Lucky Hit available as a mobile game, but you can only get the mobile version by buying the console game.
Yeah, you get a code for it. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, see Sega, you're welcome. That's how you sell a game. And honestly, if Shenmue 3 somehow made enough money, womp womp, then they could go back and redo 1 and 2 using the, say, maybe the Yakuza engine or just, I don't know, something to speed up the gameplay and remove the crappiness of the original releases. It's possible. I know it.
Well, you're talking about jobs in games. What game do you think got it right in terms of in-game jobs?
It's weird to say because, honestly, yeah, you got me really thinking about it. And most games that have jobs, they don't typically make you do the job. Like, a game that has jobs will likely be like, hey, here's a bunch of fetch quests within the game's universe. Or it'll be you select the job, and then based on some stats you have, it'll just determine if you succeeded or not. And I know someone out there is right now going, but what about No More Heroes? And my answer to you is shut up. No. Job that game sucks too. What? That game's really about, yes. Did you please tell me you didn't enjoy Coconuts?
Okay, Coconuts was rough, but the rest of the game was pretty solid.
No, I'm not saying the whole game. I'm saying the jobs, because you had to make money on the side sometimes when your pick jobs didn't pay you enough to take on the next mission.
Yeah.
So there was, I will admit, I feel like I remember there being like one sort of game that involved like driving a car. It's been a while, but I know the one that always stands out was the Coconut game, and that was a hot mess. No dice there. Maybe there was a game that had like a Paperboy-esque mini game that would be work. Which, for the record, how has that not happened yet? That would be a genius mini game in a larger scale game. Just do Paperboy.
You know, have you checked out the game The Video Kid?
I have not.
That's a game you should check out. It's basically Paperboy filled with 80s and 90s pop culture references.
Really, though?
Yes.
What's it on?
It's on pretty much everything, I think.
I'll look into that then, because, yeah, I used to love Paperboy back in the day. So I would absolutely get down with some of that action.
Yeah, we covered it on the show a few months back, so that might be one worth checking out for you.
Though, admittedly, now you got me thinking, we should ask that to the listeners, too. If anybody's listening and they want to do like a general comment, like, hey, here's a game that did jobs right, let us know, because, like I said, I'm having trouble remembering games with good jobs, and it's very possible maybe we shouldn't even play the games that have good jobs. And keep in mind, again, we're not talking about a game where you select the job and then the game show just pops up the result, because that's any freaking sim game. That's not special. Mm-hmm. We're talking you perform the task and you get a reward, and it's not a fetch quest.
Yeah, it's got to be like an actual, well, I don't want to say real world job, because that kind of video games kind of stretch that every now and then, but it's got to be a job, a mini game job.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, somebody might even come out and mention that one game. What was it, Desert Child, that I reviewed a ways back. And even Desert Child is hard. I feel like it's hard to say, because they're like, hey, you're corralling these kangaroos, but then you're like, I'm just doing the same game. Now I'm chasing kangaroos instead of racing a bike. Like, it's hard to call. I don't know if I want to call that in the same vein. It's not like a specific job. They take the same game and slap some kangaroos in it and called it work.
And it can't be something like a simulator job, like airport runway simulator or stuff. Like, it's got to be something where it's a normal game where jobs are a part of the game.
Yes. Don't mention Desert Bus, because while you'd still be insane, because even in any context, Desert Bus is atrocious. So don't mention that. There's a reason
Desert Bus is incredible. You are a liar.
Incredibly bad. That's the truth. Them's the maps.
Oh, man. So, Pernell, what have you been playing lately? Besides the review stuff that we're going to get to in a couple of minutes, what have you been playing?
Bouncing around a bit here and there. I got challenged to play Ease 8, so I need to get down with that action, finally. I bought it, reviewed it here, but I need to go back and do it on nightmare mode. I just kind of slacked on it. So now's the time to, like, okay, now it's time to get this thing right, because if I don't do it, then what kind of man am I? So I'm doing Ease 8 Nightmare Mode, and he's doing Ease Origins for the first time. Mm. In addition to that, I'm actually looking at probably even trying out State of Decay, because I did the Xbox deal they just recently had where it was like $2 for 2 months.
Mm-hmm. So I think we were talking about that last week on the show, because I was telling you to do that for Crackdown.
Yeah, you were suggesting getting it, but you didn't mention the $2 thing. Like, I didn't even realize that deal was going on.
I was talking to someone about that then.
If you mentioned the idea, you mentioned that Crackdown will be a Game Pass item, but I was at Best Buy yesterday getting racially profiled, and just kind of instinctively goes, oh, yeah, well, you're looking at talking about getting on Xbox. Well, you should look into getting their deal they're running. It's $2 for 2 months. And I was like, oh, done. I'm dead as soon as I get home. Screw that. Even if I end up not pulling it off, that's still worth $2 to chance it. Why not? So there's that.
I booted up Secret of Mana again because that's like the retro game of the month. There are a number of people who have not played Secret of Mana ever. So I was like, well, officially now, that's the game you're supposed to be playing this month, which is interesting because there's a bit of a devious reason for behind me supporting them playing that game, which is that I expect most of them to come back and say it is terrible or at least bad.
Which version of Secret of Mana?
Either. I let them choose which one they wanted. Because, you know, somebody might want to see, you know, whatever the updated graphics were. And some people might want to go see fresh and clean purity version.
You don't like Secret of Mana?
No, let me get to the why.
What so, the hell, man?
That's not in the news.
Do you hate joy? Do you hate happiness?
I hate everything that starts with joy. Joy burgers, joy fries, joy shakes, joy coke, joygasms, joy bikes. Oh, terrible. No, but all jokes aside, though, like Secret of Mana, no, I love the game. Growing up, it was one of my favorite Super Nintendo games. It is still probably my favorite entry in the Mana series alongside possibly like the Final Fantasy Adventure or whatever the other version was called, Sword of Mana or whatever. But despite the stuff I like about Secret of Mana, it had some gameplay faults that I believe that most of us just kind of forgave growing up. Because you like the characters, the art, and the, well, not even the characters, they didn't have much character at all, but the graphics of all the characters, the world kind of graphics, and the music. It's like all of it as a package was fantastic. And the gameplay of just kind of running around the map was also a great deal of fun. And if you had a multi-tap, well, look the fuck out. You were having a blast with your friends. Mm-hmm. I did not have a multi-tap. I was doing it oh solo. And yeah, I beat the game like 3 or 4 times as a kid. So yeah, I definitely like the game in general. And even now, I'm playing it on the PS4 version, and I'm still enjoying it. But those problems, I feel like people who come into it without the nostalgia that we've got will likely experience more of the problems than what we came to like. Not helping by the fact that there's been, like, the game market is immense compared to what it was like back when that game came out. Like, there's, if you need an action RPG, take a damn pick. They're everywhere. They're not special anymore. They're everywhere. So it's like, okay, what makes Secret of Mana special? The thing that makes it special, again, are the music and the graphics, which, of course, in the new version, they changed the graphics. And personally, I feel like the new graphics are just okay. They're not. They don't have the same charm that the original graphics had. They work, but they're not as special. But you still have that ridiculous get 100% to do damage mechanic. You still have the, which is a double edged. I guess it's a double edged sword here. You have the charge attacks. You remember those, right?
Oh yeah.
So of course they all looked cool when you did them, but in execution they were a real speed killer. It was like, hey, I got level 6 in whips, so in order to use my level 6 attack, I got to do that weird shuffle that they do as you slowly charge it up 6 levels.
Beep, 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 yeah. Beep, beep, beep.
Sound like your damn ship's about to explode. And you have to do it every time you want to use it, every single time. And of course you want to use it almost all the time because they were awesome moves when you pulled them off. But they were just so slow to execute. And half the time they would, and not half the time, but a lot of times they would just miss. Or you would do, say, for example, let's go with the whip, okay? Because this is, I just like ramping on the whip. So you go up to like level 6. You do the whip's charge attack. It's like 4 lashes of the whip. And it's this cool animation. But only one of those lashes actually registers anything. Because the enemy takes the hit. Then he just kind of falls on the ground. And he's immune to damage until he gets back up. Mm-hmm. So it feels almost like the attack for all of his awesome animations didn't really do as much as it was prophesized to do, or as the graphics would lead you to believe it could do. You know, it was like, it just bugged me. And enemy, the AI of the characters was just not great. Even if you made use of the AI graph that they had in the game, no matter how good you were with it, you pretty much ultimately ended up having the characters running around as either just like mob mashers and just hoping you had the items to revive them when they died, or they were MP sponges or MP batteries to cast spells with. Because, you know, the main kid never had didn't use magic, so they had to be your magic.
Yeah.
So I was like, sure enough, a lot of the people that were coming back was like, what do people see in this game? All this stupid charge attack thing is dumb, or I'm getting tired of having to charge up to do anything, or why is I got to wait till 100% to do a normal attack? I'm like, well, that's the game. that's the game we had, and we loved it. But honestly, I'm interested in hearing your guys' take on it. And it was like, they were like, yeah, this I mean, I can see why people would like it, I guess, but it's just not my cup of tea. And the funniest thing of all, of course, is that a lot of those people were actually already complaining before they even beat the Spiky Tiger, which, if you remember, Spiky Tiger is the last boss you fight before you get magic in the game. And magic is when the girl and the sprite actually become useful, because magic makes them special. Before that, they are literally just there to die. To all the bosses, to those stupid archers in the forest, to Spiky Tiger, everything. They're just bad. So that was an interesting. I was like, yep, just wait till you get them to magic. You can just use the girl to use cure water indefinitely. I hated the way magic level ups work, because most of the time, if anybody denies this, they're lying. If you wanted to level up your magic, you pretty much did spend your time in front of an inn or outside of town on the outskirts of a town, constantly casting the same spell over and over and over again to level your spells up, because outside of leveling them up, you didn't use a lot of them as often as you would have liked to. Definitely not enough to level them up. So
true.
You were just stuck grinding to get a spell boost. And speaking of spells, the fact that you couldn't dodge any damn spells from monsters is annoying as hell, because it kind of takes the feel out of being in an action RPG. When you're like, okay, time to dodge. Oh, wait, no, I got to stop while he uses gem missile over and over and over again. Oh, I'm a Moogle? That's some shit. How did I become a Moogle? Because I couldn't move. And he just moved. Now I'm running around getting my ass beat. Would be sure nice if I could dodge it. What do you mean it depends on a stat to dodge? It's an action RPG. You better get out of the damn way. It's just stuff like that where it's like, why are these design choices here? And then the remake took no effort to try to change any of it. I guess they wanted to be purists about the whole thing, which, hey, more power to them, I guess. And I'm sure a lot of fans appreciate it. But I feel like that they wasted a perfectly good opportunity to change some of that stuff for the better.
Yeah, I still wish they would have gotten rid of the 100% mechanic to attack things and the invincibility frames. That's a momentum killer with the game for sure.
It really is. That would have made it light years better by itself. If they just did that, I'd have been like, yes, now we're talking. Somebody was listening. You know, but not. They had to be pure. It's like, hey, get that money by making the exact same game with some mobile game graphics, and we're going to call it a day. Because, yes, they are mobile game graphics. Not that it's an insult, per se, but, again, if you're talking about an update of a cult classic from, 20 years ago or more, yeah, they could have done a better job than that. Just saying.
That makes me feel old.
We're ancient men. But doesn't mean we can't stop playing games. We ain't out of the woods yet. I'm gonna dump you on my deathbed playing video games too.
Speaking of playing games, you got two to talk about. Should we get started on these?
Let's beep beep boop up.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called The King's Bird, developed by Serenity Forge, published by Graffiti Games, released February 12th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. Escape into a world kept secret by a tyrant and discover the truth about your freedom. Run, jump, and fly through forgotten lost kingdoms with a uniquely momentum-based flying mechanic. Purnell, tell us about this one.
Well, I want to lead out by just kind of mentioning a particular game that may cause this to resonate well with others if they are familiar with it. There used to be a game, I want to say a couple years ago, that came out called Dust Force.
Yes.
Dust Force. We're going to like this review then. So, Dust Force was a momentum platformer, in which case you were kind of dependent on cleaning dust in order to maintain speed and get things moving. Now imagine playing Dust Force, but your momentum wasn't based on being around, piles of dirt to sweep. Your momentum was just based solely on just you jumping, landing, and dashing. That is a lot of what this game is, because it is a momentum-based platformer, but what ends up happening is at the very beginning of the game, you get access to, I just kind of call it the Sky Scarf. That's what I named it, because no one talks and says anything, so there's no name for it. So I call it the Sky Scarf. It's like a cloud of white that puffs and floats behind you. And what ends up happening is when you jump and land on the ground, if you're holding the right trigger, you'll kind of do like a bit of a speed burst to just kind of dash ahead on the ground. And if you hold down the left trigger, you'll kind of like slide across the ground. And as you do either of these things, your scarf will kind of like lose a bit of its like fluff until you ultimately burn out and run out of it, unless you, of course, jump and then touch the ground again. So that's where you pretty much get all of your ground speed from, just by jumping, landing, and like bursting. Now, in addition to that, if you take to the air, there is no double jump in this game, but what there is the ability to glide and kind of fly, because you can't just like say jump and then dash straight up. But what you can do is hold down that L button or the L trigger again like before, and you can kind of go into a glide motion. And you are going, I mean, when you go on this glide, you go extremely fast. You're like just darting across the screen. And you can use the thumbstick to kind of change your direction so you can kind of like do like a dive bomb effect, or you can kind of just kind of level yourself so you can kind of dash as far ahead as possible in a straight line. But eventually, the Sky Scarf, I love that name, will run out of smoke. And once that happens, you'll know it because you won't have that white trail of trail falling behind you anymore, and you'll just kind of fall to earth. So you have to be really smart about, you know, maintaining momentum by hopping, dashing, running, and you can wall jump also, which, funny enough, if you jump into a wall and hold down the right trigger, you'll also dash up the wall a little bit too, again, like Dust Force. So you can kind of like jump off the wall from wall to wall to wall and just dash, 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 and get a real speed kick going. So you're pretty much spending the game balancing these actions, running, dashing, sliding down hills, sliding along the ceiling, by the way, which you can also do with the Sky Scarf, and flying and gliding. And it's funny because at the very beginning of the game, they make this seem, I won't say easy, but they make it seem so simple. Like you're just kind of free-flowing, just diving and having a ball. You feel like you own the world. Kind of I would expect a game that gives you the power of flight to do. But then as soon as that tutorial section is over, the game pretty much raises up a hearty fuck you takes you to difficulty mode where you will suffer with joy. Make no bones about it, this game is not easy. And whereas the game starts out with giving you like open space to kind of dive and fly, you are quickly placed in situations where you have to be very precise and perfect with how you kind of guide yourself in between like crevices or like dive bomb between like, you know, alcoves on the walls hanging out and then shooting back up with the momentum to kind of grab a wall on the left hand side and just get to the exit. It demands things from you. It demands some crazy shit from the player. And it's fun the entire freaking time you're out there doing it. I had a great time playing this game. And the game does offer some concessions to make it a little bit easier too. There is checkpoints on each of the stages. And they are not stingy with those things at all. They are everywhere. And while you might think, well, that just makes the game too easy, I say quite the contrary. I think that makes the game bearable for people because nothing sucks more than playing a game that's tough and you manage to beat a section after multiple tries. And then another difficult section that requires practice shows up, but there's no checkpoint. So if you screw up the second section, you gotta redo the section that you just struggled through as well as try to learn the new section.
Yeah.
Well, not in this game. Checkpoints are abundant enough that is a rare thing to ever see happen. It's actually kind of nice. And there's also, for those who need it, there's an assist mode as well, which, you know me, Joe, I ain't dabble with that too much. but it is there for players that need it, and there's like a number of features that exist there, including things like flat-out invulnerability, so spikes don't kill you. There's like things, I guess, gives like infinite flight. Just a number of things that make you just kind of say, hey, okay, I don't feel so stressed out now, I just want to experience the game for what it is. So, you know, being me, I feel like I would only want to use it just enough to understand the game and then turn it off because, you know, the game was designed with precision and care to test your mettle against a number of crazy obstacles. And I think they succeeded at that endeavor. There is no one benefit to this game that Dust Force did not have is that in Dust Force, they gave you grades at the end of every stage. And I can't speak for everyone else here. In fact, I'm probably the minority in this, but when a game tells me I got a C at the end of a stage, it drives me nuts, and I need to go back and get something better, preferably an S or an A.
I agree. And
as a result of that, it slows the momentum down. That's why I've never beaten Mega Man 0, 1, or 2, is because whenever I get crappy grades, I get pissed off and want to start the whole thing over again. and eventually, of course, I lose momentum and don't want to play anymore and move on to something else. But in this game, while there is times that they show you on each level, and there are leaderboards, there is no massive grade that shows up on the screen that says, you did this well.
Which means,
yeah, exactly, right? You can feel comfortable saying, I got this time, it's my time alone, and I'm fine with walking the hell away. I'll come back later. There are collectible little bugs in each of the levels, too, where I have no idea what they do, because I suck at collecting as many. I try to get as many as I could, but ultimately, I kind of just said, screw it in certain places. But you can collect the bugs that kind of have like a tally of those guys, too. I would wager they probably do give ultimately result in some like a better ending if you get them all, but I wouldn't even put it past them just to say they're there for fun.
It could just be a random collectible.
Exactly. In which case, that's not a big deal. That's fine. I mean, sometimes it's nice to be able to tell you, like, I got a bunch of stuff. I was able to pull this off. This feels good. Like Celeste Strawberries. Though, now, just to make sure also, the way the level structure designs, I got to make sure to mention that, is it's kind of also like Dust Force, where you end up in a, once you get past the tutorial stuff, you end up in a hub world. And the hub world has a series of portals that take you to, like, sub areas of the world you're in. So you're in the forest. The forest will have 5 teleport stations. Each teleport station has 4 stages in it. When you go to those stages, each one has an ending. And if you can complete those stages, you earn crystals, which can unlock more of the portals within the level. And eventually, once you've unlocked the final podium in the stage, you can actually eventually go on to the next area of the game. And there are about 4 areas in the game total. And while they do look different visually, and they are very pretty stages, and the music in this game is, for such a difficult game, it's actually rather soothing.
Oh, it is a beautiful game.
Yes, it is. But graphically aside, I feel like a lot of the game, like the challenges are fairly samey-ish, which isn't a bad thing when you think about it. Think about how Super Meat Boy was. You played through Super Meat Boy, it had a ton of stages, but most of the obstacles were across any of the stages. Like, you'd see buzzsaws on every level. You'd see rocks on every level, you know? Stuff like that. So it didn't kill the game. You just know what to expect when they get, you know, more devious and sinister with their level layouts. They add a few new things here and there, but for the most part, you know what you're going to get into when it's time to start dodging and evading and flying and gliding. And it's a brute. But I love the game. I think it's a fantastic title. Great for both massacre runners and people who just like running without the masochism alike. It's an enjoyable game, and one that I'm glad I was able to try, because, quite frankly, this is one of those sides where, like, I would have been sad if I missed out on it.
Well, then overall, $20 on it, what do you think?
I think it's a fantastic purchase, worth every penny. Again, especially if you like stuff like Dust Force or Super Meat Boy or games where it's all about just getting to the end as fast as possible and beating your head against the wall while you do it. Soothingly.
Soothingly. Nice.
Thank you, sir. I blame this Twisted Mango Coke. Diet Coke. Not sponsored by them, by the way.
Did you hear that they're coming out with, like, a vanilla orange Coke soon?
I had not, but it doesn't surprise me, because I would like them to do this, though I don't know if that's what their plan is. I want them to go down the Oreo route. And you know what the Oreo route is. Those sly bastards figured it out.
Just find random shit to put in your cookie.
That's right, and make them all limited time only, and rotate them. So that you'll always come back. Like, I think I'm done with soda. I won't drink soda ever again. Now we got new strawberry cucumber Coke. Temporarily. Shit. I guess 1 6-pack, 1 12 case won't hurt. And then when you're done, oh man, I guess I'm done with soda now. Now introducing new marmalade guava. Whoa. you are slaying me, guy. I need to get a glass of this. Another 12-pack, here I come. Now new meatloaf strawberry.
Meatloaf strawberry. Jesus Christ, Purnell.
It's getting weirder and weirder, and I'll still buy it, because that falls into my rules, which is if someone apparently likes something enough to market it and sell it, and all the ingredients are things I've liked alone, I will take a shot at it.
Oh, Lord. Purnell, what are we going to do with you?
Your meatloaf strawberry soda, for starters. Let's do this thing.
Obviously. But you got one other game to talk about. We're actually revisiting this one. We talked about this one last episode. Dark Mika covered it. She had some issues with the game, but ultimately enjoyed it. I want to get your take on this one, Purnell. It's called Euclidean Skies, developed and published by Miro Straka, released February 5th on Steam for $9.99. Euclidean Skies combines marvelous architecture and turn-based movements to create a beautiful world with mind-bending puzzles. The game's focus is on shifting and rotating the world to gain tactical advantage and overpower the enemies in 55 elegant but incredibly challenging levels. Purnell, what did you think of this one?
Incredibly challenging is so damn right. So right. Mark that on your calendar, sir. I honestly enjoyed this game. I will say the controls take getting some used to, but I'll go to that in a second. So, Euclidean Skies can best be described as Rubik's Chess. So, you are in a world that where every individual platform functions like sections of a Rubik's Cube. You can grab it at a point and turn it either pretty much anywhere along any of its axes, either horizontal or vertical axis. And you just kind of turn the block. Actually, horizontal. Actually, I guess it's X, Y, and Z axis. Now I think about it. So, hold on. I love how I'm like sitting here like with my finger going.
This way, left, right, up, down.
Exactly. That's what I'm doing. And I realize it is just the X and the Y axis. But you can control, basically shift and manipulate the block or collection of blocks to rotate it. Again, think like a Rubik's Cube. And the idea is that you are usually starting, your character starts at the end of one side of the map, and you're likely trying to get to the exit on the other side of the map. Now, in order to get to the exit, you might have to defeat enemies or hit switches in order to create bridges or additional switches and things of that nature. But throughout all of this, you're going to be doing it by rotating blocks and moving your character across those blocks. And if there's an enemy on the screen, every time you take a step, the enemy will also take a step. And if you end up walking into its line of sight, it will hit you and kill you. So done deal. So the idea is to sneak around enemies and get the advantage, get the drop on them by smacking them upside the head with your weapon from outside their line of sight. So it gets to be pretty freaking puzzling. This game does not screw around. I mean, you want to talk about spatial reasoning? I can't think of the last game I played where spatial reasoning was as challenging as it is in this game, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Because I would like to hope that people some people will at least go into puzzles looking to be challenged and not just have their game handed to them.
Yeah.
But I will also say with this game that some of that challenge may stem from the fact that I also tend to obsess over the like stage challenges that the game throws at you. So, for example, there might be a level where they say only move your character one time or two times. Now, keep in mind that when you rotate the block, if the character is standing on it and they get moved with the block, that does not count as a move. So there might be an entire level where they say, hey, get the most of your movement done by rotating the block platform she's standing on. And then at the end of the level, you know, just kind of walk out the exit if you can get to it. And what that ends up resulting in is me going, okay, I could beat this level with little difficulty as it is, but screw that noise. I want my little medallion. And I struggle and I scream and I cry and I tilt those damn blocks until I get it right. And when I do get it right, bet your sweet ass, it feels real good. It feels really good. It's hard to describe the movement of the blocks audibly. I will admit that. But I think hopefully the Rubik's Cube mint description helps it make more sense. Like how you can like take like a Rubik's Cube and how, you know, it's like a 3x, like it's like each side has like three rows or so on it.
Yeah.
You can take the top row and twist it to the right, and all those blocks will twist. And if someone's standing on one of those blocks, they'll twist along with it and go to the other side of the Rubik's Cube. And now take that Rubik's Cube and maybe have like one straight line that goes outward and another straight line that goes in another direction, but they all function in a manner just like how turning a Rubik's Cube would work.
Yeah.
That's spatial reasoning madness, especially because you lump in chess with it. It's there might be a section where there might be a monster holding on to the bridge that you're on, and you can't rotate it until you turn the block that ripped the dragon's arm off, which then allows you to turn the overall platform. It's interesting, but it's a game that I was enjoying the challenge of it, and I like the idea that there's like a specific number of stages. I'm glad you said like it's like 56 or so. I did not beat every stage because I'm not a freaking dynamo at this shit. I'm not even gonna feel bad about it. I did not beat the game, but it doesn't mean it wasn't for lack of trying. This is a game I intend to go back to and hopefully finish up, though, because it is a unique type of puzzler for me and one that I found myself wholeheartedly engaged in. I took great joy in trying.
Did you have any issues learning the game? I know there is a tutorial in the game, but the developer told me that the tutorial isn't what you'd normally imagine a tutorial is. It's 15 of the best levels from Euclidean Lands, his previous game, that basically only handled one kind of rotation as opposed to the second. It's like centric and decentric rotations. I don't understand what either of them mean because I didn't play the game, obviously. But the tutorial isn't a normal tutorial, and I'm wondering if that threw you for a loop or if you had an easier time getting into the game than Dark Mika did.
What I'll say is that, kind of like how I mentioned earlier, just describing the game as a bit of a challenge, I honestly feel like the tutorial did what it needed to do. Like, it's an intuitive tutorial. Think of it like this. You buy the game, you know the premise of the game. You might not know how it works, but you know how the premise is. You're rotating shit, you're stabbing shit, and you're getting out the level. I can't believe I'm cursing this much, but it's part of the fun for this description. So with the tutorial, they give you they started out slow. Like, here's a simple level. You're on a 2x2 square. Okay, sorry, yeah, 2x2 square. So it's like, you know that there's an exit on the square, and you can see it without rotating anything. So you click once to walk, and you click again to get to the exit. Now, they don't have anything on the screen saying, press, click here to walk. But you know you have access to a mouse. Like, what I did was I tried to use my controller. I realized I couldn't use the controller to press start, so I knew this was a mouse game. Right then and there, I was like, okay, I see the character. I see the exit. How do I get to it? Well, I have this mouse. Maybe I should click something. You click on the block, you walk over. Oh, I see. You click one space, you walk over this space, but it has to be a space that's next to the character or adjacent to the character. So you realize right then and there is how you walk. Then the next level shows up, and you see a guy just kind of over in the distance. And you're like, okay, I have a sword, and there's a guy. I should try to walk up to him. And you see a line with an X on it in front of the guy, which indicates something happens if you're on the X. You walk into it, he kicks your ass, and you die. So now you know, can't do that. And I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Which that the tutorial doesn't give you a bunch of words to explain it, but they set you up in situations where an intuitive player is going to see it and go, I should just do this, or I need to try this. And it kind of gets you to the process of saying, I'm going to do these things to get buff. Now, as far as rotating the blocks go, I think that's the kind of thing you just kind of have to get used to on your own. Because I don't think there's enough explaining in the world short of just showing you solutions to the levels that's going to explain that to you.
Yeah.
You just got to figure it out. And honestly, I'm fine with it. I was able to pick that up. But on the normal levels even, when you go into a stage and you press pause, there will be a goal that says, like, for that medallion I was telling you about, for like, you know, beat level in 3 steps or whatever. And then below that, there'll be like a hint that they'll let you click on. If you click on the hint, it'll give you like a little bit of a clue, like, enemies don't do this if you do this or something like that. So those hints also kind of work like a tutorial because they're explaining tricks that the game will want you to utilize in later stages, most likely, in order to get by. And sometimes you'll just learn stuff on your own. So honestly, I think my answer to this question is like a simplified one, is that the tutorial doesn't hand it to you like in a lot of games, like when I say this. I love how I'm going back. Years ago, I mean many years ago, there's a guy named Ego Raptor, and he did a video talking about the Mega Man series, and he mentioned something he hates about, you know, tutorials, which is that when they'll have like a character who's like trying to tell you every little thing, like, hey man, if you press the X button, you can jump. Hey guy, that guy looks tough, but if you push X twice, you can double jump over him. You don't need that. You don't need to have everything spoon-fed to you. Just make the controls intuitive, and you'll figure it out on your own, most likely, because they show you enough visually that you can piece it together by making use of the control scheme that's available to you. Especially if there's not like a bunch of buttons to figure out. There's not like 12 buttons on the controller. There's just a mouse with 2 click buttons. That's it. Like, you can figure it out.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone's going to have trouble if they want to play this game and they get the understanding of what it's about. I don't think anyone's going to have trouble figuring this game out. Now, I will say that rotating the blocks will take a little getting used to, because like sometimes you might say click on a spot and you're like, I'm going to rotate this thing, you know, along the y-axis. But instead, the game kind of has you, it's assuming you're trying to rotate on the x-axis instead. So you're like, shoot, I got this wrong. I didn't mean to do that. And I actually was wrong. It is x, y, and z axis, because you can go left and right, around the side, and the other way. So yeah, I was right. There we go. So it actually is x, y, and z axis. Oh,
it's wacky. A lot of turning.
It's a lot of turning. Oh, baby. But yeah, this is a good game, I think. I think it's easy to pick up, ridiculously difficult to master, though. You just have to adjust to the fact that, you know, just the idea of like visualizing the rotating blocks. Like, I was explaining this to a buddy of mine before coming home to record tonight, and he flat out said, I was like, oh my God, I'm terrible with spatial reasoning as is. This sounds like brutal. And I was like, it is brutal, but not so brutal that I wasn't up to the challenge of trying it out. And as a guy who's a kind of a sucker for puzzle games, I feel like I got what I wanted out of it. I only wish there was more monsters, like, I don't know, a duck that can jump across blocks or something. I don't know. And you got like a little sergeant helmet on.
Well, maybe in a sequel.
That's right. Throw Sergeant Duck in there. I love how I brought Secret of Mana back and all of this. But Sergeant Duck, that's my favorite enemy in that game.
Oh, Lord. Well, overall, $10 on Euclidean Skies. What do you think of it?
I think it's a try unless you're into puzzle games already and you're looking for something that doesn't involve connect 3 blocks and make it disappear. In which case, I think it's a solid buy. It's a lot of fun, and it will tax your metal.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah,
Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on. Do you have any final words?
Anybody that has to, any thoughts on those, the stuff we mentioned earlier, let us know about the job stuff. Other than that, just, you know, check out Rhythm and Pixels if you want to listen to some random game music that's not, you know,
that's not already played on here.
Exactly. And then aside from that, I don't know, play hard games, have a lot of fun, drink Diet Coke in all of its wacky forms, and just be good to each other. Don't be dicks.
All right, moving on. We've got Tim Ekibis joining us. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm great. I'm here, worried over the state of my some of my favorite NXT superstars. excited for Kofi Kingston, perhaps.
Oh, yeah. Kofi tore it up this weekend.
Yeah, Kofi tore it up this weekend. In the last 7 days, really.
yeah, that exactly. SmackDown match was impressive.
His SmackDown is about to start as we are recording this. So yeah, like exactly the last 7 days were pretty banger for Kofi Kingston. And yeah, just like now everyone and their mom is like, so that's what you were planning for the WrestleMania match, right? So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I think we'll see. I hope. We'll see.
It'd be cool to see him get his moment.
Yeah. Yeah. They're supposed to announce, Daniel Bryan's, by the time this goes up, they will have announced. There will probably be way more information on this particular topic, so there's no sense speculating on it because we're recording. Yeah,
in the next 24 hours between when we're recording and when the show is up, everything is going to change. Just like if we would have recorded prior to Raw last night, things would have changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Wrestling, man. It's so weird.
Wrestling is weird.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, I'd love it. But also weird are video games.
Yeah, they are really weird if you sit there and think about them and talk about them like in any kind of sensical fashion.
Which sometimes. We should probably do.
Yep, that's, yeah.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Necrosphere Deluxe, developed by Kat Nagiri, published by Sony's Untitled label, released January 31st on Switch, PS4, and Vita for $7.99. Necrosphere is where you go when you die, regardless of being good or bad. You don't see other people around there. You don't have anything to do except waiting for eternity. As soon as Agent Terry Cooper hits the Necrosphere, he learns about the portals that can take him back to the world of the living, also called the Normal Sphere, and his quest to escape the afterlife is set. Tim, tell us about this one.
Oh, man. Necrosphere. So, kind of the gimmick behind this game is that so the idea is that it's like a bite-sized, kind of simplified Metroidvania game that falls under the realm of like an indie platformer. And when I say indie platform, I mean it's like hard and it's precise. It's hard and precise. So think like Meat Boy, think like Celeste, think like I Want to Be the Guy. Maybe not so much I Want to Be the Guy, but you know, think of that realm of VVVVV, that game.
Very difficult platformer, but now in Metroidvania form.
Pretty difficult, but yeah, in Metroidvania form. The gimmick of this game, I guess, the caveat is that you control it only using two buttons. And I don't know if that's a good thing. You know, we put a lot of buttons on controllers these days. I kind of feel it sometimes like it, a lot of the time, I feel it would be better if they utilized that better. So yeah, the idea is that you two buttons, one button goes makes your character walk to the left, the other makes him walk to the right, and that's it. You don't jump. Yeah, that's it. There's no jump, and that's a problem. Put a pin in that sometimes. Yeah, so well, it's like what they have is they'll have like these little bubbles, and when you walk into a bubble, that makes you jump up. So in a place where you need to get elevation, or where the game thinks you need to get elevation to progress, there's one of those little bubbles. So you go boop into there, and then you go up. They do add some variation to that as you pick up abilities as you go through the game, which allow you to access other areas. So one of the first ones you pick up is a ballet suit. And then when you do that, if you double tap, you'll kind of dash forward. And when you dash, you do get a little bit of air. So if there's a bubble that's like one square height above you, you will actually kind of hop into it. And you get a jetpack, which has a limited use, and you need to hold down both buttons to do that, and you'll go straight up. One of the things that drove me fucking nuts about this game is that you can't remap where those buttons are. That's always kind of a big no-no, I feel like, in general in games today. It's like, you should always have the ability to remap your buttons, regardless. You know, it's a simple thing, especially when you only have two buttons. So whether you like it or not, it is on, the buttons are the left button on the left Joy-Con. It's like pinball controls, and then right is on the right button on the other Joy-Con, or it's up on the shoulders. And just like my brain could not work with that, sometimes. Like sometimes it's like, okay, you know, I make it, you know, I made it through the game. But it's just like, so I just desperately wanted to map right to right on the damn D-pad, basically.
Yeah.
That, you know, obviously there is a need for to have the two separate buttons, but for the jetpack, you need to hit both of them. And obviously that's not going to work if they're right next to each other. But for most of the time, for the 50, 60% of the game, maybe a little bit more of the game that is up to the point where you get a jetpack, man, I wish I could just push right to move right. Instead, what happens when you push right is it brings up a little like control tutorial to remind you that your buttons are the one over here and the one over there. And it's just like, oh my God, I wish I could just remap the buttons. I wish I could just put the buttons where I want them to be, where it would feel comfortable for me playing the game. And when you're playing a super precise, unforgiving platformer, that seems like something that's kind of really important for your enjoyment of the game. That's me.
Yeah, I can understand that complaint.
Yeah.
It seems pretty weird.
Yeah. Like, I get it. It's a thing that they're trying out and they're committing to, but it's not something that's going to work for everybody. And it was a real struggle for me. I had an easier time when I concentrate on using the shoulder buttons, but I had a more difficult time doing like the double tap with those, you know, mm-hmm. or just certain other, like getting other certain movements. It was just weird. Cause it's like, I want to use a D-pad. Again, I use a Hori D-pad on my Switch, that Joy-Con add-on. So it's like, I am 30 plus years of playing video games and using a D-pad to move left and right. It's hard to wire my brain to go another way. And just every time I sat down to play it, like, I get frustrated at some point because it's just extra frustrating when I would instinctively push right to move right and that goddamn tutorial would pop up, like, taunting me. Just like, no, we got a thing here, and just like, as soon as I'm like, okay, well, can I remap the buttons? No, okay, all right, we're gonna have a problem here. but also, like, the lack of a standard jump is problematic when you fall down, when you don't mean to. Like, sometimes I would just overstep, something, and it's just like, oh, great, well, now I have to kind of, like, backtrack around for a minute or so because I fell down one square or two squares, and I have no means of jumping back up. This was pre-jetpack, obviously. And it's just like, well, that sucks. That sucks really bad, and I feel like that is represents kind of a failure in their game design of trying to do this really super simple control scheme. It creates a problem where it's like, okay, well, suddenly it's like, yeah, I can't jump, and that's cute, but now I have to waste my time going back around and weaving through dangerous obstacles that I've already played through before, you know? Yeah. Yeah, that sucks. There, for a Metroidvania game, there is no map, which probably sounds a little worse than it actually is. The way the game is laid out, like, once you kind of wrap your head around it, is pretty simple because there's, you know, you'll go through an area that branches off of the main hub, you'll find an item, and then you need to use that item to get into another place branching off that main area. So that you basically just need to stick to exploring around that main area. But it's easy to kind of get, for me, I, you know, because when I get an item in a game, I'm like, okay, well, where, I'm thinking back, like, where can I use this, you know? Like, yeah. Where will this help me move forward? And sometimes I would just be, like, blanking, and I'd, like, wander into another area. Then I'm like, wait, crap, I don't think I was supposed to come down here, but now I'm down here. So now I have to walk all the way back out or find my way all the way back out to get back to explore the property, which led me to just turning off the game and then turning it back on to load a previous save before I'd wandered into said area, because that was just easier. But it's a pain. I kind of wish there was at least some kind of simple, rudimentary map in there just to help. But again, it's supposed to be hard. Hard's fun, right? Right? It's supposed to be fun-strating, not frustrating.
Fun-strating. There's fun-strating. A new one.
Yeah, well, it's like in the like the bullet points I was reading of the game on some page. It was like, it's like wonderfully frustrating. I don't remember the adjective they used. And I was like,
deliciously frustrating.
Deliciously frustrating. There you go. And I'm like, is it though? Because I think in this isn't like my favorite kind of style of platformer, but I have certainly played and enjoyed games like Meat Boy, The End Is Nigh, and Celeste, which are all available on the Switch, mind you. and this like even for being such a short game was just like so aggravating because of just trying to control it, and especially like when you get further on, you have to do some pretty elaborate things. Like there's this one, oh my god, it's like I have the jetpack, I have to like jet up, hit a bubble, like move to the right, jetpack up again, hit another bubble, like manage timing around these flaming pillars that are moving up and down the center of the column, and oh by the way, you hit a timed switch at the bottom of that well and you have to make it through a door at the top in a certain amount of time, so there's time pressure. And like I remember that section was the first one that like beyond frustrating, really just made me want to die. I was just like, oh my, this is just not what I'm here for. It was just like, okay, I gotta like hit this jetpack up, push the button to go that way. Like, oh crap, I pushed the wrong button because I'm falling back on my instincts. And oh, I have to wait for the timing of this flame thing to move by, but now I'm taking up too much time and I'm only like halfway up this thing before the timer expires. And I'm just like, oh my god, this game. This might sound awesome to some people.
I was gonna say, it sounds like if you could get past the odd controls of the game, it sounds like a really solid game.
It does seem like the character movement, I won't say the controls feel good, but like the character movement does feel good. The game has a very, you know, simplistic like pixel art look to it, which I think is good and works. Like the music I really like. There's things about this game I really like, like the movement of your character. Yeah, it's really solid and responsive, like just kind of the ambiance of the game and exploring these corridors and the music like that all works together. It's just actually playing it is just like, fuck, man, like, geez, I wish my greatest wish for Necrosphere Deluxe is just to add some button mapping options and not to just stick so rigidly to the two button. You could stick to the two button scheme, that would be fine. Just if I could put it on the D-pad for those movement moments and kind of like work it the way I want to work it.
Yeah.
I do think the game would be more playable if it's like, okay, yeah, you move left and right, but also like that side dash that is up on the, you know, it would be better with it might be more fun with more buttons involved, but I can understand what they're going for. They want to keep it simple. But if you want to keep it simple, at least let me remap my damn buttons. Because it was a massive object between me and being able to enjoy this game.
Well, as it stands, is the $8 price tag enough to make this something that people might want to take a chance on? Because it's not that expensive of a game.
It's not that expensive a game. It is really hard. If you are into really hard games, then you may be interested in giving it a try. It, I think for most people and for myself, I would be denying this game. If they added a controller remap feature, I have to get another look, and that might make the game work a bit better for me, and make it something a little more recommendable for other people. But I think most people would just be pissed at this game. Which is kind of its design to do, like, in fairness. But yeah, only if you're into this style of game, would I think it's something that you might want to check out.
Well, I might check this one out. It sounds like as long as you could get over the hurdle of the odd controls, it sounds like there's a decent amount waiting for you.
I mean, the game is advertised as being around 2.5 hours, so it's not like a super long game.
Yeah.
But it seems, you know, quality, like the what they've designed. I like the idea. I believe me, I love the idea of short fucking games these days, because like having a kid, it's tough to get through longer games in any kind of reasonable amount of time. So I am all for that aspect of the game. I just wish it was a bit more playable for me.
All right, sounds good. Well, Tim, cool. Always good having you on, chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
I just no, I don't. No, Go Kofi. Hashtag Kofi versus Bryan at WrestleMania.
All right, and finally, we have Chris Taylor joining us. Chris, how's it going?
Hey, going great. It's getting slightly cold over here.
You're in Texas. Cold is like 60.
Yeah, it's getting like 60 over here. Can't stand it. Have to wear a light sweater sometimes.
Oh, no, poor you. We're getting like fucking 6 inches of snow this week, and you're talking about, ooh, I have to wear a brisk breeze and have a nice light jacket on.
Yeah, well.
You go to hell, Chris.
Okay. How about you go to hell, and I shall go to Texas?
Well, you're already in Texas, so.
No, people quote that all the time. It's a Davy Crockett thing.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's what he said when he came down to the Alamo where he got killed.
Nice. He was like, see, we're learning things on this show.
He was a congressman at the time.
I'll be damned.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
The more you know.
Anyway, should we talk about games?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Next game to talk about this episode is called Alvastia Chronicles, developed by X-Create, published by Kemco, released February 12th on PS4 and Vita, February 14th on the Switch for $12.99, previously available on Xbox One for $14.99. After encountering the man who killed their parents 10 years prior, Elmia, a priestess, and Alan, her brother and protector, set out to avenge their deaths as they fight to stem the tide of monsters flooding into the upper world and restore peace to Alvastia. Will they really be able to gain the strength necessary to bring their parents' killer to justice and save the world? Chris, tell us about it.
No, they weren't.
Oh.
I'm just going to start answering all the rhetorical questions like that.
Just with negative answers, like, no, they all die.
No. No, it doesn't go so well for them. They just didn't have what it took. Alvastia Chronicle. Well, once again, we're given a confusing name, but Alvastia is the world in which the people live. It's the opening story was like, everybody lived on the ground, and there were continents and oceans, and it was great. And then this one evil guy messed everything up so bad that the people had to move into the sky. So all the continents are in the sky now.
And makes sense.
And they sealed up the bad guy with pillars? I don't know. Sometimes it's Mad Libs with RPG. Like, when you're making RPGs at the rate that Kemco X-Create does, I mean, sometimes you really just have to, you know, throw a dart at a dartboard. there's pillars, and there's a world in the sky which looks just like all the other worlds that that are in 16/8-bit RPGs, except that, you know, it's just clouds instead of ocean. So that's so this is the world that you occupy. So Alvastia, what's the other word in that title?
Chronicles.
I've already forgotten it. Chronicles, yeah.
How do you forget the title of the game?
Because Chronicles is so... That's part of so many titles.
True. All right, I'll let that one slide.
Yeah. I'm remembering the complicated word, but Chronicles, yeah. So this game really excited me, actually, because when I booted it up, I was like, oh, this is in the art style of Dragon Sinker. And Dragon Sinker, for a long time, was my favorite Kemco X-Create game. It takes their, I would call it, like, 32-bit in HD kind of look. Like, it looks like a HD remake of a 32-bit sprite-based RPG. That's their typical style. And in this one, they've gone all the way back to a more traditional, like, 16-bit, really pixelated, even possibly 8-bit for some of its style. And the soundtrack, of course, is chiptune bleeps and bloops. I don't know, and I couldn't find out, at least I haven't been able to find out, whether Ryuji Sasai is involved in this one, but it does have pretty similar music, so I don't know. Either way, this is a game that has a much older aesthetic, but because it's a Kemco X-Create game, and this is forever their jam, it has a ton of features that are drawn from all the other games in their catalog, minus a couple, and then with a few new additions. So, and it's, this is the first game where after hours of gameplay and I'm still going through tutorials for stuff that's being unlocked as I learn what it is and how to use it. This is like the first game in the series where I'm almost at the point where I'm like, this is enough features. Okay. This is enough things. I just want to play RPG. I don't need to. Oh, there's another one, huh? Oh, okay. Let's learn this one too. But the cool thing is about these games is that they have that variable difficulty, including an easy mode that is so easy that you can be like, oh, you're doing this, huh? Well, I'm just going to ignore it and just going to keep fighting everybody and winning. So
yeah, I found the game to be significantly easier than a lot of the other Kemco games we've played.
Yeah. And you know, that's, so it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you learn all these complicated things, but to what end? I didn't try it in the extreme hardcore mode, like I did some of the others, but I mean, all it, you know, it just pushes the numbers up really on everything else. So, but having said, this actually features some, interesting things that I really appreciated. So the game boasts that it has a cast of 100 characters that you can recruit, which instantly takes me back to the days of Suikoden. You know, those long gone days, speaking of 32-bit, actually. And just as I suspected, recruiting characters ain't that hard. Sometimes you just talk to somebody, they're like, oh, I've heard of you, I want to join you. Ba-ba-ba-ba! And they join you. And also, the 100, it's not 100 playable characters like in Suikoden. You know, Suikoden had 108 characters in every game, of course, but, you know, 90% of the game involved just picking your favorite six and sending them out into the world, or even just three. So that's kind of how that goes. And indeed, this game ups that a little bit because there's actually four player characters, and then all of the other characters that exist are companions, and you basically put them. Wait, am I saying four? I think I mean three. Yeah, I think it's three, actually. Sorry. But it's basically groups of four. You have your leader character, who is the one that you give the command to, and any other companion that's in that set of characters. If they have a skill or something special that they can do, then you can choose to do that. Otherwise, if you choose to just attack the enemy, your main character attacks, and then it's just the other four characters in that group attack, and it just kind of piles on this compound damage. Which can be quite a lot, and most often was enough to bring just about any enemy down, I noticed. And then you move on to the next character, and of course they have the front, middle, and rear positions, so your rear position is most likely going to be taken up by magic users, your front is more your melee people. And so that instead of like straight up doing a thing where, you know, you get XP share with like every character that's in the roster so that you basically just level up every character and, you know, not care about them. The game actually does make you choose to make characters active in order to gain experience or to set characters aside into strategy rooms, quote unquote, which is two more tables with six positions where you can choose characters to either boost your physical attack on the left or your magical attack on the right. And the type of characters that you put into these slots will actually affect that. And so that's this whole other thing, you know, element to it. And of course, the characters in the strategy room will also gain experience so that you can then put them back in your party when you wish. So I found that pretty interesting. Although, you know, again, that might be something that factors much more into the late game than the early game, because it didn't make a huge difference in the early game. They've done away with the gardening system, apparently. Either that or it's in there somewhere and we just haven't unlocked it yet, hours into the game.
I don't remember it when I played it either.
Yeah.
So it might not be there.
However, they are using the timer system to now do what is considered, I guess, a treasure chest system, which is to where sometimes you'll get a special treasure chest at the end of battles, and you put it into a slot, and then you have to wait with that treasure chest in that slot in in-game time for an amount, which I actually got one of the ultra rare platinum five star whatever chests, and yeah, it was like 3 hours or something like that of in-game time that I would have to wait before I could open that, and you only have enough slots for I think four, and you know, the one stars open instantly, two stars take like 10 minutes, but yeah, like if you've got ultra rare treasure chests sitting in those things and you can't get any more treasure chests, you'd have to discard them or abandon the chests or spend some of your special money, your special like jewels and stuff that you use for gambling, to open the chests immediately. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean, it's basically the same as the gardening system. It's just for treasures instead of stat boosting items. Which, you know, stat boosting items are a little more nerfed in this game compared to something like Antiquia Lost or something like that, where, you know, you just pile on all these stat increasing items until you're just godly or godlike. So that's in there. And then that actually brings me to another point, is that that treasure thing isn't accessed from the regular menu. There's a second menu that you have to access. For the first time, a Chemco X Create game has put so many features into an RPG that they can't fit it into one menu anymore. And if you've ever played one of these games, they have meaty menus. I mean, these things are like, your options and extras sub menus are as large as the regular menu, which is already beastly. And now you have, with the right shoulder button, another quick menu that takes you straight to the save or map. Or it's, as far as I could tell, the only way to get to the treasure part of the menu. So I was like, man, great job, guys. We've got two full menus now. And I just thought that was really funny. Again, I appreciate this stuff because I actually look, I like the extra, you know, gimmicks and doodads in these RPGs. You know, because if you're not making an epic emotional world, you know, rending story, which they usually aren't, it's usually fairly cut and dry. It's like, at least give us the technical stuff so that we can sink our teeth into that. So I actually like it. I'm having a moment of levity at the absurdity. But anywho's, speaking of gambling, which I was, the gambling system's back. Now it's and it's a lot like As Divine Hearts 2, which I talked about last time. And that you can use tickets to try and get items. And of course your items, if you get too many items, it has the system where your items can eat other items to get stronger. I talked about that like 5 times now, so I won't go into too much detail there. It's a good inventory management system that basically, if you get a sword that's stronger than your last sword, you can absorb the weaker sword into the stronger sword and make it stronger. And that's a way that you can incorporate stat increases. And actually, you have to do that in this game if you want to recruit a certain character. He says he won't join your party until you get one of the parameters of a weapon over 50. Which tends to happen around mid-game, so I was like, damn you, now I have to remember where you are for later.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that you're going to have to remember where they were and go back and get them.
Yeah, so, you know, you can gamble for the best weapons, or you can even gamble for other companions, including, it looks like, the character from Alphadia. I'm doing really good on remembering these names today. So like in As Divine Hearts 2, you can actually bring in characters from other Chemco X Create games, which I'm loving. I'm really, really enjoying seeing characters from other games that I've played that are, you know, seemingly lost to the ages. It really makes them feel connected. Last thing I'm going to say is that the cast of characters is, you know, comparing it to Dragon Sinker, which one can't help but do, you know, you got your different races and, you know, your human elves and, instead of dwarves this time, they're going with ogres, which actually makes a little bit more sense because the dwarves last time were green and, it sounds more like ogre to me. I feel like that was maybe even a mistranslation because they're also the same size as everyone else. while the characters themselves are a little, like the main playable characters themselves are kind of typical X-Create things. You know, you got your guy who is actually a silent protagonist in the sense that he can't speak, and that actually factors into the story, which is kind of interesting. Like, it's actually remarked upon that he has lost his ability to speak. His sister, who is not a main combatant, but is a support member and is, you know, kind of the focal point of the story. And then you have an ogre lady who's kind of like strict, and then you have an elf guy who's in love with the ogre lady, and they kind of have this one dimensional, you know, he hits on her, she rejects him kind of thing. And it either gets tiresome or hilarious depending on how you read these stories. And then you have your like cast of like companions, which, like I said, there's human, there's elves, there's ogres, and there's also anima and souls. And so anima are animal people, and those can range anywhere from like a dog that wears a priest outfit to just straight up a cat. Actually, two cats so far that I have brought into my party, which is great. And because, you know, Dragon Sinker had cats, but you had to win them in the lottery. And this one, you can just straight up recruit them. And then the Souls ones are really interesting. In the early part of the game, you recruit a barrel and a box and a straight up just club. There's a club that is alive and joins you. It's like, how would you like me to join you? Not as a weapon, but as a companion. And it's he's kind of a badass too, actually. So like, yeah, this game is like, we got to cast 100. What'd you expect them all to be like people? Here, have a box, have a barrel, have a stick.
Hey, those whatever works, right?
I know. I laugh at it, but at the same time, I actually think it's kind of cool. Apparently souls are just, you know, they're reincarnated souls that have possessed, inanimate objects. So like there's story behind why they are like they are, but it's just like rolling into battle with various containers as your partners is endlessly amusing for me. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what the rest of the cast looks like. And of course, getting this story going, because I'm sure it's going to be, you know, good old reliable Kemco X-Create, just solid RPGing.
Well, for $13, what do you think of it?
$13, yeah, I say go for it. I always enjoy a Kemco X-Create creation. This one is no different. You know, it didn't grab me as hard as Dragon Sinker did, but I think maybe the novelty of Dragon Sinker is a little bit more what got me. This one, I think, is actually a better game. I think it's got a lot going for it for the options. Aesthetics are good. It's interesting. And, of course, it's got a rare instance on the Switch of having DLC. So you can actually purchase triple experience points or double damage or the ability to eliminate encounters, like random encounters, which is normally a provided option, but in this one they're like, nope, $2.
Yeah, it's optional though. So
yeah, and I play RPGs to fight. I'm fine with fights. So
yeah,
but you know, if you don't want to fight and you just want to read the story, then $2, that's all you need.
Rock on. Next game to talk about is called Mars Chaos Menace, developed by Byte for Games, published by Badland Publishing, releasing March 1st on Xbox One for $9.99, previously available on Switch, PS4, and PC. Humanity is terraforming Mars, but chaos and destruction threaten the planet. Battle your way through innumerable hordes of enemies that wish to destroy you and face the most terrible and powerful monsters in the galaxy. Our destiny is in your hands. Chris, what are you going to do about that?
Nothing.
Oh, well, life was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, next game, no. Okay, so, what was it? Mars Chaos what?
Mars Chaos Menace. You are so bad at remembering the titles. Damn.
Mars Chaos Menace. Well, I keep thinking Mars Attacks, which is just stuck in my head, you know? Mars Chaos Menace, yes. This is a vertical shooter, which really surprises me that I didn't catch it before you sent it to me. It was like, hey, you want to play this game? And I had seen the title in the eShop, but I didn't look at it, so I didn't see that it was a straight-up vertical shooter, which is, like, my second favorite genre to RPGs. So I was like, oh, hell yeah.
We should point out this released a few months ago on Switch, PS4, and PC, but there was a delay on Xbox. Xbox version's finally coming out March 1st.
So how did I miss this one is my question.
I don't know.
So, yes, this is a vertical shooter. This is in the sort of bullet hell tradition, but it's got a little bit of a twist. Ooh. But yeah, your character, for one, I gotta say, the main character reminded me a little bit of the Mars robot that has recently become deceased. So this is I feel that robot getting the treatment it deserves, it being brought to life as a, you know, as a war thing, an instrument of war. And bullets. So yeah, you play basically as like this kind of robot person with a jetpack sort of thing. You roll around with your regular shot, try and avoid the bullets. The bullets are ultra numerous. The screen can, it's not like, one of the, you know, cave style shooters that's just filling up the screen with like bright, shiny bullets. They're actually much smaller, but they are still colored and like colorful and multitudinous. So it's not exactly like a traditional bullet hell, but there's enough bullets, I think, to qualify it as such. So the way you interact with this is that you have your regular shot. You can shoot down these towers that periodically appear in the level, and they will bring up a little option ships, basically. Seems like the maximum that you can get is 3, and depending on the color of the ball will determine what the shot is, you know, straight shots that are powerful or spread shots that are less powerful but cover more ground, typical stuff. The interesting thing on this one is that your hitbox is actually rather large compared to a different bullet hell, and you're not exactly sure where it is because it doesn't do that thing where it shows the little dot when the action gets intense, you know?
Yeah.
Be like, actually, this is you, so don't hit that. You just kind of have to guess a little bit. But that's actually not the point, because what the game wants you to do is use your shield. The shoulder button brings up a shield charge, which, you know, you can keep the shield on as long as you want. However, if it gets hit, the power of the shield goes down, and this is all represented on the left side of the screen. And as the shield goes down, you know, it changes color, and then eventually, you know, a shot will eventually destroy it. And anytime that you don't have the shield accessed, the shield will regenerate. So, you know, you can kind of get through one big layer of bullets and then, you know, take off your shield, and then it'll slowly, you know, sort of recharge for the next wave of, you know, intense action. You kind of plan it around that. Now, here's the catch, is that the only way to get screen clearing bombs, you know, bombs, of course, being a necessity in the in bosses and such in these type of games, because bosses can get very, very intense.
Oh, yeah.
And this is no exception. I mean, this is really intense on these bosses. So you need these bombs. In order to get them, your shield has to be destroyed. So you have to block enough shots without recharging your shield to destroy it up to 3 times. Because, you know, once it's destroyed, it still comes back. It recharges. But, you know, you don't have that protection even as a, you know, as an option. And then, you know, you have to wait until it fully comes back and then fully destroy it again. And then it will give you another bomb. And again, your maximum store is 3, which will barely be enough to take down a boss. And I didn't find any settings for difficulty in this game. I believe that the only options were for sound effects. So, this game is, there's no way to nerf your way through this one, because it is, intense and very difficult. And you have 3 shots per level to get through it. If you choose to continue, you will continue at the beginning of the level. So this is a game, this is definitely a thinker's shooter, because you can't quarter eat your way through it either. So you really have to get used to the kind of the levels are very predictable, so you just kind of have to get used to riding the waves of, you know, well, the action's going to intensify right here. I need to be not only shooting these enemies, which, by the way, you can shoot backwards in this game as well, and one of your options will automatically shoot backwards, so it's one of those kind of things as well. But you know, not only do I have to keep on top of these enemies and not run into them, I also have to keep my shield up and blocking their shots, but not so much that I destroy the shield and get destroyed by this wave of bullets that's really hard to dodge. I have to get right at the point where, you know, I'm going to be clear for a couple of seconds so that my shield can recharge, you know, in order to get another bomb. And then I got to unload these bombs on this boss. And the bosses are very creatively done. They're huge. They fill up the screen with bullets, and they feature various gimmicks that you have to, like, kind of take care of. But it's not so chaotic and overwhelming that you just can't do it. This is definitely a game where if you really hunker down and get through it, then you can get through it. But unlike most of the vertical shooters you can play on the Switch, this one doesn't have a very easy way out.
No,
I don't think so. I mean, I didn't find one.
Well, then overall, $10 on it. What do you think of it?
I think it's great. I love the look of it. I love the enemies. The music's really fantastic. I didn't really touch on that, but definitely check out the soundtrack. You know, this one's not for the faint of heart, for sure. If you enjoy your bullet hells nice and spicy, this one brings the heat. So this is definitely for your folks that want to challenge themselves and don't mind having to start over from time to time, because this isn't a rich kid game, you know?
No rich kid strats.
Yeah, can't just dump the quarters in and get through it.
Gotta earn it.
Yeah, but it's good. I really think this is a very good one.
Awesome. So Xbox gamers have that one to look forward to. And then one other game to look forward to is called Awesome P, developed by Pigeon Dev, published by Sometimes You. This one is also coming out March 1st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $5.99. Help the greedy P make his way through a string of levels filled with deadly traps and cute but dangerous enemies, and collect all the coins to which he can only reach. Chris, tell us about it.
Awesome P. It's a whole new level of, like, what can we make into a mascot kind of thing. So, man, is it... I'm trying to remember all of what Sometimes You came out with. It seems like I review them periodically, but it always seems like they have the hard games. And this is a hard game, so that's why I was...
It seems they have a lot of hard ones and a lot of easy ones. That's the beauty of being a publisher, is you could publish things from so many different developers. But it's the developers who make the game magic.
It's true. It's true. It'd be Pigeon Dev, and I'm not familiar with them. But they've, Awesome P. This is a platformer. I'm going to say hardcore. This is definitely from the, on the ultra challenge side of things. It reminded me a little bit of Mutant Muds, which is a great compliment, because Mutant Muds is one of my favorite platformers ever. In that it features pixel precise jumping, instant death from everything. I mean, well, Mutant Muds gave you 3 hits, but still. Everything in this game is made of spikes. And, you know, it's all about collecting all the coins and trying to get all of the different things scattered throughout the stage, try and get that score, and then, you know, get through all the stages that way. And, of course, replay them again and again, you know, until you get it perfectly right, you know. This is very much a perfection game. The look of it is actually like a Game Boy game, which I found interesting because, so we talked about Oniken and Odalis last time, and I was talking about the forced retro mode, which, by the way, they're going to fix with a patch.
We wanted to bring that up on this episode.
I'll make an official retraction after
this game. Yeah.
Yeah. But this one has the retro mode that you can switch off, but, and it does actually give you the option to switch it off. And I do recommend that you do. It's interesting though, that I have to point out that the retro mode for this game. Okay. So it's designed to look like a Game Boy game. So the screen is monochrome green. You have to go with contrast rather than different colors to determine what is solid and what is not, which actually does become a challenge in some of these stages. You can put in scan lines into the game, which the Game Boy did not have. The Game Boy was not a scan line type of system because it wasn't on a CRT. And then there's CRT mode, which actually just scrambles your picture slightly. It puts a scramble bar on the bottom of the screen that kind of makes it look warped. And there's just like, you know, staticky flutters on the screen on board. And again, I must stress that that is not on the Game Boy. Game Boy is an LCD screen. I don't understand what the point of that was, but
clearly they were playing on a Super Game Boy.
Yeah, with none of the color enhancements or anything like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, but you know, again, it's amusing. It's amusing to look at, and you can turn it off. That's what I like to see in retro modes. And the soundtrack is definitely Game Boy. It's, you know, chiptune and really interesting tracks. It doesn't try to overwhelm you with, like, you know, rockingness like a couple of these games featuring chiptune soundtracks that I've heard recently. So I kind of like that it's a little more, I'm going to say subtle. You know, they it actually sounds a little bit more like something you would have heard in the day. But yeah, so again, getting back to the gameplay, it's basically collecting coins and jumping on, you know, platforms. Your little guy has a double jump, and as opposed to most games with a double jump, this is a game where you're going to use your double jump more than your regular jump. The regular jump does almost nothing. It's basically what you use if you want to jump quickly to a platform that you can reach. You are, in fact, going to be pressing the A button twice on most of these platforms, which I found interesting. Because it's not much of a double jump. It kind of both put together equals like a regular Mario jump. So, but you know, what do you expect from a legume? Peas are legumes, right?
I don't know.
I should have looked that up before I got into this.
Is a pea a legume?
So,
yeah.
Yeah, you just, okay, great. I'm a genius. So any hit from anything, including like the broadside of a spiky like block, that is to say something that doesn't look like it can kill you, will kill you and instantly send you back to the start of the stage. There's no death sound or death animation or, you know, try again. It doesn't even interrupt the music. It's just as soon as you hit something, you're back down on the bottom of the stage instantly. And you know, I have no complaints about that, because this is a kind of game where you're going to trial and error your way through it until you can get every jump correctly and you can predict every enemy that's coming nearby, because there's no way to fight back. You just have to dodge or, you know, jump out of the way or clear it somehow. And the timer's going, so clearly they expect you to be quick about it, too. And then, yeah, the only little complaint I have about this is that for some reason, I suppose this must factor in later in the game, you have the option to reset the stage yourself without dying. I suppose this is for whenever you get stuck, or perhaps if you missed a coin or something and you're going for 100% completion, it's just basically a suicide button.
Yeah.
It is the X button, and the jump button, the only other active button in the game, is A. So think about that for a second, as you're mashing the A button twice for every jump and having to position yourself into these complicated pixel perfect positions. How often do you think you're going to hit that X button on accident?
I've done it.
I too have done it. It has been done quite a bit. But I mean, props to these guys for really bringing back the just teeth grinding frustration of some of these older platforming games, because this game absolutely has it. The stages are not short. Some of these stages are fairly long, and again, any slip of the jump or double jump or of your thumb accidentally pressing that X button sends you all the way back. And I will say I've rage quit a couple of times. I'm actually kind of proud to say, because I don't normally, most games don't challenge me to that point anymore. So yeah, like after getting through, I got through several levels, and I'm not exactly sure, like, because you're on Awesome World, which has, you know, all these flags and stuff, but so many of these stages are just in the first level alone. So it's like, you know, level 1-1, 1-2, etc. And I'm kind of wondering if that's it, or if there's actually other worlds apart from Awesome World. I have no real sense of how large scale this game is, but I will say I had fun with the stages that I did play. Definitely felt like an accomplishment when you finally got to the end. Of course, only to realize that you're like, you know, at every stage they keep track of how many coins out of how many available you got, like, you know, 22 coins out of 35. And so you know that you're going to have to go back there at some point and get all those coins in order to get something good.
I'm looking it up. The game has 29 levels.
Okay, so that seems like about the amount of levels that were on the map, which is interesting. Still, 29 levels for $6. You know, it's not bad.
So, overall, what's your verdict?
Overall, I would say this is a buy it if you're into difficult platformers. I know it's not some people's cup of tea. Some folks like to have a little bit more forgiveness in their games.
Or checkpoints.
Or checkpoints. Yeah, there are no checkpoints in this game. For those people, I say it's a buy it. For everyone else, I say it's a try it. You know, watch some gameplay videos or something like that. Check it out. See if it's the kind of thing you want. Aesthetically, I enjoy it quite a lot. I think it looks great. You know, it really, you know, it's monochrome, but lots of good attention to detail. Sprites look great. Music's awesome. And yeah, it's a lot of game for $6. So I say if this seems like it's up your tree, then go for it.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Chris, so, always a pleasure. Oh, what were you saying? Oh, yeah. Our retraction.
Retraction time. Okay. So
last time. I was about to wrap things up and I, stupid me.
Well, we probably should have done it separately and like edited it in or something to sound official, but whatever. Who cares?
Attention.
Attention. Attention. In my last review, I talked about Oniken and Odalis, and I mentioned that these games had the unfixable retro mode, that is to say, it forced scan lines and the kind of rounded off, like, tube look on people, and of course didn't have the customizable controls, and that really affected my opinion of Odalis, because, you know, jump with A and use your regular weapon with Y, it's just not a good time.
Yeah.
I didn't realize until after we talked about it and the show went up on YouTube that they actually had announced that they are coming out with a patch that's going to fix both of those things. They're actually going to have customizable controls, and they are going to have a toggle switch for the retro mode, which I will so happily start playing these games again and get through them with both of those things fully utilized.
Hooray!
And there are other things that they're bringing as well, so it's going to be really cool. So anybody who has purchased Oniken or Odalis, you're in for a treat, because they're going to bring, you know, they're going to wheel those out any day now. And for those who are still on the fence about them, I would say more than ever, go get those games because they're fantastic. And with these new options, then I would say these are in line to be probably the best 8-bit retro, like, styled new games on the Switch. I mean, apart from your, well, you know, you got your Shovel Knights and stuff, which nobody's going to topple because they're so popular. But for my bucks, I mean, these are the kind of games I love. So, in my opinion of them went way, way, way up after I was made aware of this announcement, but I do wish to retract that from my criticism of them last time, because while that is still true as of this recording, they are going to fix it, and so that's worth noting.
Awesome.
Yep.
Now we're all good to end the show.
Huzzah!
Took care of everything we had to do. I guess it doesn't change your ratings for the game, since they were both already buy it.
Yeah, they're both already buy it.
So now they're just really buy it.
Now they're like buy it, and they're going to end up on some list somewhere of like my favorites or something. I really need to like restart my blog so that I can keep track of what my you know, GOATs are.
Yeah, you should do. That's your homework for this weekend.
We'll see. I'm doing another really involved project. It might at least be until March before I do something like that, but don't hold me to that.
All right. I'm holding you to it.
Ah, damn it.
You could do it for my birthday, March 18th.
Okay. March 15th?
18th.
Right. Huh?
18th.
18th. Okay, sorry. Yeah, okay. I'll try.
Anyway, that is the end of this episode. Thanks, Chris, for coming on, doing your thing. Thanks to Purnell and for Tim for coming on as well. Music, I'm going to do another long-ass Tiberian Sun song because they're fun to do. Just one long-ass song and that's it.
Hell yeah, those guys are cool.
They are. So, Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
I already final worded so much.
Bionicin and Odalis.
Yeah, Bionicin and Odalis. They're fantastic.